Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, February 22nd. Happy birthday, George Washington. You know, once upon a time, February 22nd, today's February 22nd, was the national holiday called George Washington's birthday. And weirdly, now that it's become President's Day, it can mathematically never fall on Washington's actual birthday because it's observed on the third Monday in February, which cannot be any later than February 21st. Do the math. That was part of the Uniform Monday Holiday Act of 1971. But it's today, not last Monday, that George Washington turns 289. Some national holiday trivia there to start your week. As for today, politicians and viruses are on the move. While Senator Ted Cruz went to Cancun to wait out the crisis in Texas, a member of the New York delegation went to Texas. In fact, Queens and Bronx Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has raised nearly $5 million in relief for people hard hit financially from the storm. Here she is on Saturday outside a food bank in Houston.
When disaster strikes, this is not just an issue for Texans. This is an issue for our entire country. And our whole country needs to come and rally together behind the needs of Texans all across the state. And, you know, as was mentioned earlier, disasters don't strike everyone equally. When you already have so many families in the state and across the country that are on the brink, that can't even afford an emergency to begin with, when you have a disaster like this, it can just set people back for years, not just for days. And so we have tragedy in this state. We need to rally around the state. We need to rally federal support for Texans and the state of Texas. And we need to make sure that we make short and long-term policy decisions so that this kind of devastation, preventable devastation, never happens again.
Bronx and Queens Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in Texas. Another representative from Queens, Tom Suozzi, whose district runs along the north shore of the Long Island Sound from eastern Queens to western Suffolk County, tweeted this: catastrophic hurricanes, tropical storms, forest and brush fires, droughts, flooding, and unprecedented freezing in Texas this week. The Biden administration has put climate change back on the government agenda, and not a moment too soon. Joining us now is Congressman Tom Suozzi on that and the coronavirus relief bill that's getting close to passage and more. Congressman, always good to have you on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me on.
And, you know, some people have wondered, what does a freak cold spell and snowstorm in the South have to do with global warming? It would seem to run in the opposite direction. Have you answered that question for yourself based on your tweet?
It's not just global warming. It's climate change, and everything's changing. The Earth was historically able to take all the different injuries that we inflicted upon it as human beings, but it can't take it anymore, and it's reacting to it very dramatically. You know, human beings have existed for about, 800 generations. And in the past three generations, we've had the industrial age. And we've really piled a lot on the Earth in a very short period of time. And it just can't take it anymore. And we're starting to see the impacts. And we need to react to it.
And some people call it global weirding, because as the temperatures get warmer, it affects the wind patterns. It affects the amount of moisture in the air, things like that, that can cause even this freak snowstorm in places like Houston, Texas. What do you think of your Queens delegation colleagues' relief effort? It's striking that a New Yorker is taking a leading role on this.
I think it's wonderful that she's doing that. And Alex is a very thoughtful person. And the fact that she would do something like that was using her quote-unquote celebrity to try and help people is really what this business is all about. And I applaud her for it. During Hurricane Harvey, we collected foodstuffs and sent down tractor trailers worth of food down to and other supplies down to Texas. But I'm not nearly as well known as she is. And I think it's really wonderful that she did it.
And, you know, in the clip we played, the Congresswoman seemed to be making the point that not only is emergency relief needed now, but a focus on climate policy, too, and also on inequality. it's as usual. The people already with the least got hit the hardest, like happened here with Hurricane Sandy and lots of other things. What kinds of policy implications do you think that might have?
Well, that's a big, big question. There's a lot of different points to hit there. One thing I want to emphasize is, you know, New York has been hit very hard, for example, by the coronavirus, as has many places in the country. But when we hear elected officials talking about blue state bailouts, it's really very irresponsible. And we here in New York say, listen, we've got to help our brothers and sisters down in Texas, especially those that are the hardest hit people. As you pointed out, people with the lowest incomes are some of the people that are the hardest hit by these type of tragedies. Well, the same thing's happened in New York. And that's why we need help as part of the coronavirus relief package that President Biden has put out for state and local aid, because we've been hit so badly by sales tax diminishment in our state, which affects our state, affects our school districts, affects our city, affects all of our local governments. So there's so many different issues that we need to address. I think we're going to be talking a lot more about policy going forward and hearing about a lot more upsetting things, because Trump is no longer dominating every single minute of the news every day. So it's giving us all a chance to actually look at all the things that are happening around us. And climate change, inequality, income inequality, racial inequality, the funding of governments, these are all things that are serious policy issues that need to be discussed on a regular basis, which we haven't gotten around to because we've spent all this time on this showman's back and forth, fostering a fear, environment of fear and anger. And you can't solve complicated policy issues in an environment of fear and anger. You need smart people of goodwill to sit down and talk to each other and try and find common ground.
So the COVID relief bill, some of these provisions that people are counting on will expire in mid-March, but some of the provisions are still being debated. How close are you to passing this?
The Congress and the Senate have really been working very, very rapidly in a methodical way to get this done in time for March 14th. So the Budget Committee has taken all the work done by the House Committees of Jurisdiction. I'm on Ways and Means. $944 billion of the $1.9 billion package came through the Ways and Means Committee, for example. All the different committees, I think there's 9 separate committees of jurisdiction, have given all their work, their markups, to the Budget Committee. The Budget Committee's been working. They're going to finish up, hopefully, today to put it all into a complete package, you know, 600-page budget package that will have to go through a process in Congress through rules and et cetera. And we'll hopefully be voting on it on Friday. It may slip into Saturday. Then it'll go to the Senate, and then we'll have to reconcile the two.
So you mentioned Republicans who are saying blue state bailout and things like that. Here is Republican House Whip Steve Scalise on ABC This Week yesterday with a variety of his party's objections to the bill in its current form. He's responding to the host, noting that the Democrats' version has been very popular in the polls.
If you said, do you want us to borrow that money from your children, because that's what this is, I think their answer might be a lot differently. And especially if you told them a fact that there's over $1 trillion of money unspent from previous relief bills that were bipartisan. The money's still sitting in a bank account. And we're going to pass $1.9 trillion of additional spending to bail out failed states, to raise the minimum wage. What does that have to do with COVID? It should be focused on helping families and small businesses who are struggling, not bankrupting our children.
Congressman, you're in the moderate caucus known as the Problem Solvers. Do any of those objections speak to you?
No. This is something we must do. We must do this package. The only mistake we can make now is not to do it big enough and not to do it soon enough. And as you pointed out, this is very popular with the American people. And I think that Steve Scalise and other Republicans are, you know, objecting to this bill at their own peril. Every single president is going to have the opposite party try and tear them down. That's just the nature of politics. Some politicians, some presidents are effective at overcoming that and getting things done. President Biden has developed a comprehensive plan here. He is outselling it to the American people. The American people are in favor of it, including Republicans, independents, and Democrats. And this needs to be done. People want some relief. They want a comprehensive approach. I think that the Republicans are opposing this at their own peril. And, you know, every administration, every president is going to face the opposite party. He's going to try and beat them back, try and cut them down. That happens with every president. I don't care who it is, from Clinton to Bush to Obama to Trump. The opposing party always does that. Some presidents, some politicians understand how to get things done, even in that environment. I think that we will find that President Biden will be very consequential in this respect, that he understands the policy, he understands the politics, he knows the people on both sides of the aisle and both sides of the Congress, the Senate and the House, and he knows how to get things done. The people, the American people, support this bill, and he's out there selling it. They want a comprehensive plan, and they want something done that's going to finally beat back this virus. And he's out there demonstrating that he is getting things done for the people. I ran for Congress. My campaign theme was Swazi gets it done. I want to get things done. Biden wants to get things done. He wants to actually deliver for the American people. I hear Democrats all the time saying, enough with the messaging bills. Let's actually do things that help people. That's what this $1.9 trillion package is all about. And every economist has said the worst thing you can do is not spend enough money or not do it quickly enough. I think that President Biden gets that. And I think Republicans are making a big mistake in not helping get this done.
And you make an interesting point about unity, about sort of the nature of unity and what we should even mean in the media or anywhere else when we talk about unity. Could it be that unity, meaning more people supporting the same thing in our polarized country, could it be that unity will come more from ambitious policy that helps a lot of people than from compromising with Republicans for a bigger vote at the moment, but that does less and touches fewer lives?
It's going to be different in different circumstances. And, you know, sometimes you need to just get something done. This $1.9 trillion package, we just need to get this done. And we'd love for Republicans to cooperate with us, but if they're not going to cooperate, we're going to just keep on working to go forward. Every Democrat who's been around for a while in the Congress, you know, Schumer, Pelosi, even Biden around, they go back to 2008 when Bush was leaving office after the 2008 meltdown. Well, when they passed the bailout package to save us after the fiscal meltdown in 2008, it was with 179 Democratic votes and only about, you know, 80 or less Republican votes. When Obama got into office and he said, listen, we have to continue to do this bailout. We have to continue to address the stimulus for the meltdown in the financial economy, in the economy. They tried to cooperate with the Republicans, and the Republicans led them along, and they delivered zero votes. So the Democrats had to do it all on their own. So people are very, very affected by that. So listen, I'm the first person who wants to work across party lines. I'm always trying to do that. I'm always trying to build relationships. But when you need to get something done, you need to get something done. And this is one of those instances. And will we come back after this and talk about infrastructure and try and work together with the other side? We absolutely will try and do that. But we're going to get something done.
Sandra in Huntington. You're on WNYC with, I think, you're a member of Congress, Tom Swazi. Hi, Sandra.
Yes, I represent Huntington.
Hi, I'm just calling with regard to contributions to the state of Texas or any place individually that we can send some contributions monetarily. If you have a list that you can help send to us or say on the air, that would be great.
We'll put something on our webpage. I mean, right now you should just look through the traditional sources like the Red Cross, but we'll put something on our congressional website later today or tomorrow. But that's wonderful that you're thinking that way, Sandra. You know, again, remember when we went through Hurricane Sandy, everyone's favorite politician, Ted Cruz, was saying, you know, let's not give any money to help New York during this difficult time. And he talked about how it was, a blue state bailout. We don't think that way in New York. We want to help people, even people from states that aren't necessarily sympathetic to New York. So the fact that you want to do that and you're inspired to do that is much appreciated, Sandra.
And besides the big organizations, there are lots of smaller mutual aid groups functioning in the hard-hit areas of Texas. I don't have a list offhand to read to you, but I know that's one of the things that Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez wanted to highlight was some of the smaller community-based mutual aid organizations. So, again, I don't have it to give to you right here on the air, but there are ways to look for those, and that's one thing you can keep in mind if you want your contribution to go to a bigger or a smaller group as you begin to look for the right one. Debbie in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with Congressman Tom Suozzi. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Brian, and hi, Tom. Yeah, my question is, what about that Republican objection? Why hasn't the previous bill's monies been spent?
Right, that particular, the particular stat that we have been hearing in the news, mostly from Republicans, tell me if you want to refute it, that I'm trying to remember the exact number, but some large number,
dollars.
Close to $1 trillion from the previous bill has not been spent, and now you want to authorize almost $2 trillion more. What's the story there?
Well, there's a lot of money that has to go through a process, and that process takes time. You don't, you know, say the money's authorized and it goes out the door a moment later. Some things, we're frustrated that it takes as long as it takes to get out the door. But, for example, the PPP program, which is the payroll protection program for small businesses, there's lots of processing that's still going on, even though the application process is over, to try and get those loans out the door through private banks. So there's hundreds of billions of dollars that's still out there related to that money. That's just the way of the world with government. But when you talk about money for state and local aid, well, we really need that money for state and local aid, and there hasn't been money authorized since early spring of last year, and that's $350 billion of this bill. You need money for unemployment insurance that's expiring on March 14th, and that's hundreds of billions of dollars. So I could go through each of the different items that's in the bill, but I believe that all of these things are necessary, as does the president, as does the Democrats, and even a few Republicans believe the same way, but they just may not be there for the votes when we need them.
Dave in Old Beth Page, you're on WNYC with Congressman Suozzi. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you? I'm a big fan of yours, Brian, and I have to say the best compliment I ever received is when I met your mother, and she said I reminded her of you.
Oh,
so. Oh, that's nice.
How about that? That's very sweet. And hi, Ma. I don't know if you know Dave, but there you go. Go ahead, Dave.
She wouldn't remember me. What I wanted to point out was, you know, listening to Steve Scalise criticize the minimum wage increase and talking about how the bill needs to help families. Who does he think earns minimum wage? People with families. They're not all, you know, they're not all people living in a furnished room on their own somewhere.
But let me bring people up to speed on what that refers to. And Dave, thank you very much. It looks, well, there is in this bill something that would seem to many people on the surface not to be COVID relief, that the Democrats are tacking on a big agenda item to this COVID relief bill, and that is a permanent hike in the federal minimum wage from $7.25 today up to $15. What is it doing in this bill, first of all, and what do you say to Dave's comment and the Republican objections that it doesn't belong in this bill?
Well, first let me talk about how important increasing the minimum wage is. I mean, we've done it here in New York already, but you pointed out that the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. I mean, if you make $10 an hour and you work 40 hours a week and you work 50 weeks a year, you're making $20,000 a year. So at seven something an hour, you're making $14,000 or $15,000 a year. Don't tell me that someone who works hard, works 40 hours a week, works 50 weeks a year, is going to live the American dream to have a place to live, to educate their kids, to buy health insurance, and to retire one day without being scared by making $14 or $20 or even at $15 an hour. That's $30,000 a year. $15 an hour, 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, that's $30,000 a year. So we need to restore the American dream. Most of the anger that exists in our country, I believe, that gave rise to Donald Trump in the first place and to Bernie Sanders to some degree, is because people are just very unhappy because they're working hard and they just can't make it. We've created enormous wealth in the United States of America since the end of the late 1980s. The Dow Jones has gone up 15 times, 1,500%. The GDP has gone up 8 times, 800%. But people's wages have gone up less than 20%. And we're not sharing all the wealth that we're creating in this country with the people that go to work every day. And that's what we need to be doing. So that's why we need to increase the minimum wage amongst a whole host of other things to support labor unions and to support collective bargaining and to try and get people to share their good fortune when they're making the money with the people that work for them during the process. It's a key to the success of the United States for a long term. Why is it in this bill? Because people right now are especially in trouble at the lowest ends. $40,000 a year is not a lot of money that people make, but 25% of the people that make $40,000 a year, 25% of them are unemployed right now. We need to get those businesses reopened by beating the pandemic, by continuing with the vaccine program, by continuing to wear our masks, by continuing to do contact tracing, by stopping the spread of different variants. We need to beat the virus, but we also need to get people back to work. And when they get back to work, we need them to make sufficient wages so that they can live the American dream, so that it's clear as day that working is a lot more attractive than collecting unemployment insurance. Having a $15 a year minimum wage is a way to do that. Now, the minimum wage will not go up immediately. It'll be over a period of years that it will take it to increase to $15 an hour. But we need to get started.
I read that the Congressional Budget Office says raising the minimum wage to $15 would cost more than 1 million jobs. So is the more living wage for workers making the minimum a good trade-off in helping low-income workers with that many others losing jobs or not getting hired at all?
Well, first of all, I'm not confident that that trade-off will be the impact in the long term. I think the trade-off is important, and what we need to do is work on creating additional new jobs as part of the Biden Build Back Better program. When he talks about the infrastructure program for the United States of America, that will create millions of jobs in the United States of America in all kinds of areas, not just traditional traditional construction, roads, bridges, sewers, water, schools, broadband, but in green energy as well. And that's a way to address climate change, but also put people to work in the process. So I think that this is not a one thing. One thing will solve everything. We need to do a whole host of things. We need to have comprehensive solutions for the problems that exist. The $15 an hour minimum wage is just one piece of that puzzle.
Congressman Tom Suozzi, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian. Really appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.